It's Friday, May 6, 2005, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California, and it's time now, of course, for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. My name's Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today, on our show, after a spot of geek news, we're speaking with president of 37 Signals, a web design and development firm that makes some very clean web applications, including a brand new service launched on Tuesday called Backpack, which is hard to describe, but stick with us and we will. During the second half of the show, I welcome you to join our conversations. The phone number's 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. And of course, you can go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. I'll give out that contact information again when I invite your participation in about half an hour. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell, and the air with me is Geek Sean Cleveland, Senior PR Marketing Manager for Netcell. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning, Lyle.
Thanks for coming and being here and, of course, getting some news. We're going to talk today with a wonderful discussion about web application development. Of course, I like web application development, but maybe that's why the focus is so wonderful for me. In any case, we're going to be speaking with the president of 37 Signals, a pretty popular web development firm that's doing some amazing applications. But before we get into all that conversation, let's do some geek news. Sean, what's happening this week?
Hey, remember last week we talked about hybrid hard drives?
Do I ever?
So basically hard drives will be using flash technology, kind of like, you know, hybrid vehicles use a mixture of batteries and gas to power the vehicle. Well, with a hybrid hard drive, you can actually extend the battery life of notebooks by they figure by up to 10%.
And the basic idea is you have a flash component in there that doesn't need power to store the data, and you load some of the content from the hard drive onto the flash, and then the spin drive doesn't have to spin to get some of the data.
Yeah, flash is getting so big and so inexpensive comparatively that you can do exactly that. Let's say you're booting your operating system; it'd be great to boot off really high speed flash. And you wouldn't have to power up the hard drive to do that.
It's funny. Why didn't this come around sooner? You'd think it would be a hit
makes a lot of sense.
So what's the newest about it? It's really working?
Well, they're just playing with it more and figuring out just, how far they can push it. And they think they could save, about 10% of notebook battery.
You know, there's a whole topic I want to cover the next couple months or so. I hate computers is kind of the idea of it. And there's so many frustrations about computers that we just, as geeks especially, just kind of take for granted, It takes a while to boot your computer. Why? It should boot right away. What's the point? There's all these things that we just accept that are really annoying, and I'm glad to see that maybe this one will solve the booting problem of a PC.
We can only hope.
All right. Well, I've got one. People probably know about this already, but I'd like to talk a little bit about it. A new variant of a worm infecting PCs worldwide, the sober worm. This new variant, the variants basically are people that modify them slightly. This one called win32.sober.p, that's the name of it. I guess it's the P version of this worm. Basically, it right now is responsible for 4% of all email. So it's a pretty...
Wow, it's huge.
A pretty big one. The big companies already have their patches working that they will get rid of it for you. Sophos, another major, antivirus vendors. But you do need to deal with it. So make sure that your virus is up to date. You're on a Windows machine, of course. Make sure that your virus protection software is up to date. And you might want to download the removal tool from your vendor. Most of the vendors offer remover tools. And when I'm talking about vendor, I'm talking about Sophos. Sean, what do you use for virus protection? Norton antivirus? I use Norton
on some of my computers.
You're a bad boy, aren't you?
It's terrible. And I just read this great article I forwarded to you. It's about how hackers are taking people's machines through spyware, turning them into zombies, which they use.
Well, that's what we're talking about with these worms.
As denial of service attacks. So they get 10, 20,000 computers. People don't even know their computers are being used this way to attack online gambling firms outside of the U.S. And what they're doing is if they don't pay money, you know,
they stop the company
basically
from doing
they attack their servers and cost them a lot more money. And oh, it's crazy.
Yeah, it's a big business. It's actually slowed to some degree because there's a lot more defenses of it now. But especially, I mean, the article talks all about that. I should probably link that on our site.
So software company Webroot released an updated version of its State of Spyware report.
What company, I'm sorry?
Webroot.
Webroot, okay.
And that firm found that 88% of PCs are infected with some sort of spyware. That number is actually down from 92% from last quarter. But yeah, people should get out there and really take control of your machine. Make sure you're running antivirus software. Don't just use one piece of spyware removal. Use several tools if you can. We recommend Adaware and someone's totally escaping me right now.
Some of these, there's a whole show about it. We have links from GeekSpeak if you want to go take a look at it. But
we really should probably make a section of the front page.
I guess so. It's such a big issue.
Yeah.
Making a machine safe is, you know, it's like you have to learn a lot to do it. It's kind of frustrating.
But, that's kind
of... No, of course, these problems we were talking about are Windows problems, but I got to say that any day now I'm feeling like a big attack's going to happen on a Macintosh environment. I'm feeling more and more like it's a target. It's got high profile. It's, you know, high visibility. It's not a lot of users.
Well, another story about Mac.
Yeah,
a bunch
of
holes.
Apple just released a patch that plugs 20 Mac OS X vulnerabilities, security vulnerabilities. And that's a pretty major patch for them. And it's not for the new Tiger, which you'd assume it would be for, because they just released Tiger and you think, oh, there's a patch right after that. But no, it's for 10.3. 10.39 is actually the most recent. But basically, if you have the most recent Panther, you need to upgrade. You need to do the updates. And it's some serious stuff. It's like a TIFF image could contain parameters that would result in image data overwriting the heap, which could cause someone to execute code. So by viewing a TIFF image, you could execute code. It's very unlikely that someone could do it, but what you need to do, you're on Apple OS X, you just go to the Apple up top and make sure you connect to the internet and click on Software Update. And when you run that, you'll be able to download and patch your machine, and we recommend it. Sean, another one from you, sir?
Yeah. So after WinHack, I guess, this was just the Windows Hardware Engineering Conference that just took place in Seattle last week. There's been a lot of talk about Microsoft is really going after Adobe's PDF format.
Yeah, why are they doing that?
It's the format wars. Because he who controls the format controls the future. I don't know. Basically, Microsoft, you know, they won a format that can be saved out of any Windows application that allows applications or these files to be opened without an application. So let's say you're in Word or you're in Excel and you want to send that document locked down so it can't be modified at all to somebody who doesn't have any of those applications, but you want them to be able to see it like you see it and print it like you see it,
right?
Just like PDF offers.
Right.
I mean, this is a basic form. Microsoft is calling their format Metro.
And it would be basically a PDF killer, essentially.
Well, not really, because Adobe offers so much more.
Yeah, but do you use all those new other features of Adobe's?
I mean, they support multimedia files, electronic forms, and yeah, not a lot of people use those advanced features.
It's interesting, though, you know, Adobe just grew leaps and bounds by merging with Macromedia. So we're seeing, you know, I mean, of course, Microsoft still dwarfs anybody out there, but
right,
it could definitely be a battle to some degree.
So if you hear about Microsoft Metro, that's what it is. It's basically trying to steal. Not steal, but supplant Adobe's basic PDF features.
You know, I say they have got a target, because when you download and install Adobe Acrobat, booting time takes forever. It's a large application. It's got lots of features that you don't necessarily need or use. I think that there's a niche there that someone can get
in
there
and replace
it.
I got a copy of CS2 from Adobe, and I've been playing with it.
Photoshop? Adobe.
The whole suite.
Uh-huh. Cool.
And I gotta say that PDF Adobe Acrobat loads so much faster now.
Ah, good. They listened. Okay, you got another story for us, or should we go into you got two in front of you, it looks like.
Yeah, Toshiba demonstrated their cell processor simultaneously decoding 48 MPEG-2, which is DVD quality.
Wait, what's
streams.
The cell processor?
The cell processor is Toshiba and Sony's next generation processor. It's been basically designed specifically for multimedia type applications.
Okay, so it's not a
and for the Sony PlayStation 3. It's what's going to power the Sony PlayStation 3.
Is it a normal Windows core?
No.
I mean,
this is not an x86 based chip.
It's new chip.
This is completely redesigned, a whole new idea. It uses what's called a cell technology. We really got to get somebody on.
Nothing like NetCell, the company you work for?
No.
Okay.
No.
Totally.
Cell. Yeah, we make a storage processor. Cell is going to be used. It's not going to compete with Intel and AMD based machines. Like I said, it'll be in the Sony PlayStation 3. But it is highly optimized to decode to do this kind of thing and to play 48 MPEG 2 streams, decode them simultaneously. Wow, that's just amazing. So it just shows the power of that chip. Should be interesting. I bet you it'll show up in media center type,
devices.
Definitely.
All right. Cool. Well, thank you, Sean, for the news. Sean Cleveland. I'm Lyle Troxell. You're listening to GeekSpeak, of course. You may have noticed that good web applications are hard to come by. You may have also noticed that a lot of websites offer an experience that is less than pleasant. Well, move over bad design. Hello 37 Signals, makers of Basecamp and the newly released Backpack, both web applications that you can use for free, though they have paid versions as well. The geeks have been using Basecamp Project Management web application for a few months now. We use it to plan our shows. And it's great. It's a really wonderful service. We liked it so much that we contacted the company and invited the president of 37 Signals, Jason Fried, to come on and talk about the company and his products. Jason, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for being on. You're in Chicago right now.
Yep.
Via phone, and I appreciate it that you're joining us. Basically, large-scale web applications, I mean, web applications of this nature, it's a major project just to launch them. And I noticed that Basecamp was launched before Backpack. Did you use Basecamp in managing Backpack?
Yeah, we definitely did. We even used Basecamp to build Basecamp. Kind of our philosophy is to use what you build while you're building it. You'll be a lot closer to the real experience for a longer period of time and kind of be able to craft a much better product that way.
Assuming you're making applications that help you make software.
Yeah, that certainly helps. But if you do, it's a great way, you know, you kind of eat your own dog food. It really makes you produce something that's much better in the long run, I think.
I wouldn't be calling it dog food, but I get your point. I found out about your company through Ruby on Rails, which is a new kind of development strategy. I'm researching it and doing some work at UCSC with it, and
sure.
Really neat. We're not going to talk a lot of details about Ruby on Rails because, of course, you're not one of the core developers on in that side of the business.
Right.
But I wanted to talk about Basecamp, because I ran across that first from the Ruby on Rails development environment. And Basecamp's basically a project management system. Can you describe it a little bit? It's hard to get a finger on it.
It's a different sort of project management tool. Traditionally, project management tools are kind of like broadcast products where someone would kind of create a project plan and blast it out to a bunch of people, and it'd be just this one-way publication, essentially.
And there's one Microsoft project document,
right.
And it just gets
Microsoft
emailed to people.
A great example of that, and there's plenty of others as well. Basecamp is more of a tool, a project management tool built around the idea of communication. Everybody in the project can log into Basecamp and communicate, see what's due, see what's coming up, see what's late. And it's kind of the central repository where you can discuss things in a message board sort of format with, you know, messages and comments. You can post to-do items, you know, what's due, when's it due, who's responsible for doing it. And when something's done, you just check it off. And it has some very simple calendaring, scheduling as well. So it's really built around the idea of communication more so than graphs and charts and reports and, things like that, which are more traditional project management.
I've also noticed that I think one of your, I'm kind of taking this from the outside, but one of your core values is the person using the application can be trusted and is intelligent. And that's kind of something that it seems to me you kind of base it around that idea.
Yeah, it's really based around trust. You know, if you're working with people that you don't trust, you probably shouldn't be working with them in the first place,
right?
If possible. So the idea is anyone who has access to a Basecamp project can pretty much do anything in the project they can.
What about edit, like, other people's messages and such?
You have to have admin access to edit other people's messages, mm-hmm. but it is an option. But anyone can comment on anybody else's messages.
Yeah.
And there's nothing that's really hidden from anybody, so there's no... There are things called private messages where you can hide certain things from clients if something isn't ready to show them yet.
There's basically two main groups. There's the people working in the company, and then there's the client that is you're servicing.
Right.
So the client can go up and upload things and interact with what's going on, and you can still use it kind of privately without. So you can talk about the client. You know, we should add this feature in because we can get a couple grand from them.
Sure. If you want to do that, you certainly are free to do that. Yeah, the idea is that, you know, every client at every level can at least at the very minimum post messages and also upload files and post comments. So the idea is not to block anyone from communicating. We really think it's important that clients are involved in their project just as the developers, the designers are.
It's hard to describe it, so I really suggest people take a look at it. I'm not going to add everybody to our project, but you can try it out. It's at basecamphq.com, and you can try a free version. The free version is limited to some degree, but you can definitely play with it and see the application, and I highly recommend it. If you're curious about that URL, just remember geekspeak.org and click on today's show. Let's go forward now to what you just released on Tuesday, I think,
The
Backpack, which is much more geared to an individual person kind of managing their digital life, if you will.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a bit about that?
Yeah, sure. Backpack is kind of like a mini version of Basecamp in some ways, although it's considerably different, but it shares a lot of the same tool sets. Notes, where you can just post, you know, loose text. You can create to-do lists. You can upload images and upload files and stuff. And the idea is that it's a personal information management tool, which can be used personally or for small businesses. But the idea is that instead of having a traditional personal information tool or PIM that has a bunch of required fields and you have to enter data this way and you have to enter data that way, Backpack is really about a blank slate. You can enter data any way you want, basically, and order it any way you want and kind of display it any way you want. And so it kind of works around you instead of you having to work around it.
It's so funny. You're describing it really well to me, but I don't think to everybody else. So let's try to kind of break down. Imagine a web page that you control, that you don't have to know any code or anything, that you can very easily add things to.
Right.
That's what it is. And it seems to be, I mean, if you're not using the web a lot, it doesn't make a lot of sense. But imagine you normally carry around maybe a Post-it. I do Post-its, and it's just annoying as all get out. But, you know, I'll have yellow stickies on my desk, and I'll write down something. And then I'll write that note down and kind of stick it on the monitor so I remember it the next day, or stick it in my pocket so I remember it. And it's just a mess of these little stickies with little tiny notes on them all over the place. And the idea behind this is that, I mean, the reason you take it with you is you want to be able to check it from anywhere kind of thing. And you don't really want to make a new Word document, make a note, and save it and have to try to find it in your file system by doing finds. So this thing basically allows you to make new pages, and the pages would kind of be categories if you think of it, and then add content of different forms to those pages, and even reminders.
A great example use for this would be something like, let's say you're going on a trip somewhere, and you need to keep track of some things you need to do for the trip. So you make a page called, you know, My Trip to San Francisco, for example, and then you add a few to-do items to it. And those are simple, filling out one field. A to-do item has a checkbox next to it, so when you're done, you check it off. A to-do item might be book a flight or book a hotel or get a rental car or whatever. Whenever you've done something, you just check it off, and it's marked off.
Mm-hmm.
Then you might want to add some notes to that page.
Like your flight information.
Yeah, hotel confirmation numbers or flight information or whatever. Or like a list of restaurants you want to try when you go, or a list of friends you know who live there, things like that. And then you might want to also upload some images, like some pictures of places you want to go, or some pictures you've taken on the trip, or a map, or, you know, whatever, some sort of guidebook or whatever you might have. So you kind of want to, you can add all these things to one page without knowing anything about the web pretty much at all. And everything's there for you, you know, from wherever you are. If you're in a, you know, computer at home or a computer at work or a computer at a friend's house or an internet cafe, you can get to this information from wherever you are.
Yeah. Now, this isn't really an address book or calendaring system. Let's be kind of clear about that. It's not a place where you can, like, you know, have your addresses have certain fields and then sync your Palm device to it or anything. It's more like a scratch pad, a web scratch pad, a place you can just put stuff up really easily. One of the cool features that you launched with Backpack that Basecamp wasn't supporting, which I think is just amazingly cool, is being able to email to the web page. So each page, if you're the owner of the page, you see an email address that's unique to that page, and if you send an email to it, it gets added. How do you think of that?
It's something that we built because we needed it ourselves, and that's how we often build software. It's like we figure out we have a need, and if we need it, you know, tens or hundreds of thousands of other people potentially need it. And the idea is that you know, everyone's spending a lot of time in email every day, and a lot of people are using their email app to keep track of little bits of text here and there. And so if everyone's already in email and they're used to that flow and they're used to sending emails, how about turning emails into something that's more, that are more useful, where you can, you know, send an email to a page on the web and have it published online automatically for you? So we just thought that the email, you know, people are comfortable with it, and it's a great place, a great, people are really familiar with the concept of sending a mail somewhere. So instead of sending it to another person, you can send it to a website and have it published there.
And I've been using this all over the place. I like to research new domain names that are cool. So one of the things I'm doing right now is just keeping a list of domain names that I find that are available. And I'll go to a domain, you know, site and search it real quick and, you know, find one that's, oh, this is kind of a cool name that maybe I'd want to use for something. And so I won't register it, but I'll keep a hold of it so I can think about it. And so I've just been taking that and throwing it in an email and sending it to the page, and it adds it up.
Definitely. If I could touch on one thing that you brought up earlier about calendaring real quick.
Please.
Yeah, Backpack doesn't have calendars, but obviously it has something called reminders. And the idea behind reminders, they're first of all, they're emailed to you or they're sent to your cell phone. So you could say, like, you know, pick up the dry cleaning tonight at 6 or return that DVD before it's late, you know, on Monday or whatever. But the idea is that there's a lot of things in your life that are date and time specific but don't really fit on a calendar. Like, you wouldn't want to put on your calendar to, pick up the dry cleaning. It's just bulk on your calendar that you don't want. So there's this new segment of things that are in your life. They don't fit in your calendar, but you need to remember them. So that's what the reminder section in Backpack is for.
I like it. You wouldn't want to enter in your calendar because it fills up space. It's a big entry. And also, you don't really have a specific time for it. It's kind of like, you need to do it at some point.
Yeah. And Backpack reminders, you can set specific times if you want, but you can also say something like next Monday or later today or tomorrow morning.
Right.
You don't have to think too much about an exact time. It's not about an exact time. It's like, pick up the dry cleaning at the end of the day,
right?
Whatever that is. So,
and of course, the message. I lost my train of thought. So let me get on to a question I've got for you about how you, as a company, how do you work? I mean, what, you're president of 37 Signals. You're in Chicago. One of your lead developers is in Europe somewhere.
Yep.
How do you function? Do you have a head office? What does it look like?
Yeah, we're based in Chicago. There's two of us here in Chicago. One of us is in New York, one of us is in Provo, Utah, and one of us is in Copenhagen, Denmark. And, not to continue to plug our products, but we use Basecamp a lot to communicate. It's a great tool for teams spread out all over the place to kind of communicate in a central location. But we use Basecamp, we use a ton of Instant Messenger. We use, AOL IM all the time, including, I'm in Chicago and a coworker of mine, Ryan, is also in Chicago, right down the hall, but we IM more than we talk because IM kind of allows you to, or actually forces you to focus in a lot of ways, because you don't want to type long paragraphs, you want to type short sentences. So you kind of focus and think about exactly what you're going to type and you get it out there. We also use Skype or other forms of voice over IP or audio chat sometimes whenever we need to call David, who's out in Copenhagen.
So, Jason, I have a question.
Yeah.
What about PDA support?
For Backpack?
Yeah, Palm and Pocket PC.
Yeah, right now, email is kind of like the middle ground. For right now, a lot of Palm devices can send email. So if you happen to be somewhere and you have an idea, you can just email a page, perhaps. We are going to be working on a mobile version, so there'll be a slightly scaled-down version that you'll be able to access on your Palm or PDA's web browser.
Yeah.
Right now it doesn't work, but we're hoping to get that out maybe in the next few months sometime.
Well, they don't even have wireless support built into Palm devices yet, but it's certainly going to be in their next, from what I can tell, they're definitely going to add it.
I know people who are using Backpack with their Trio 650 because they're using the email capabilities to email stuff to pages, and also Backpack will send reminders to your cell phone as an SMS text message.
Right.
So there's some level of integration, but not a tremendous amount at this point.
That's great.
We're speaking with Jason Fried, president of 37 Signals, makers of Backpack and Basecamp, wonderful web applications to manage your life. This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com.
Edith Meyer, a local wedding cake design company, is expanding its product line to include organic treats for the public. This will be showcased at Craft Delicious, a modern craft bazaar, on Sunday, May 15th at the Loudon Nelson Community Center in downtown Santa Cruz from 11 to 4 p.m. For more information, visit www.edithmeyer.com or www.craftdelicious.org.
You're listening to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell, and the Craft Delicious geek in the house is Sean Cleveland. We're speaking with Jason Fried, president of 37 Signals, a wonderful web design firm located in Chicago and all over the world to some degree. If you have questions or comments about web development, about the products that they offer, or general questions, though I'd like to kind of push towards web stuff, phone numbers, 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. That number's good in California. If you're out of California or don't want to pick up a phone, join us via email, geekspeak.org, click on Contact Us, and we'll answer your question as we get it.
Can I be geekalicious?
You can be geekalicious.
Excellent. On the next This American Life, That's Not What I Meant, a teenage girl accidentally convinces her classmate that she's a Charles Manson worshiper. An art project gets mistaken for a threat to the government, and a basketball coach discovers he's been hired to be a football coach. These and other stories of how easy it is for communication to go awry on This American Life, Sunday at 10 a.m. on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP.
You know, that is a wonderful show. The promos are just amazing.
The promos are so great.
This program is supported by a grant from Cruise.io, providing internet services including DSL, spam filters, PHP, and MySQL. Now, with nationwide access, information about Cruise.io membership is available online at cruise.io.com or by calling 459-6301. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. The geek this morning, Sean Cleveland from NetCell, and our guest, Jason Fried from 37 Signals, web developers. Join us in our conversation. The phone number is 476-2800 or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Of course, you can use the internet. Visit geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. And, you know, if you are out of state and you want to pay for the call, that's fine. 831-476-2800. All right, let's get back to the conversation with Jason. I want to talk a little bit more about your development cycle and how you kind of do it. Who brainstormed the idea of Backpack?
Backpack kind of just came out of a need that we had. We've been using Basecamp a lot, and we kind of realized that there's some things that we were doing in Basecamp that Basecamp was a little bit overkill for. And so we started thinking about, we started kind of just using it in ways that it wasn't really intended, and we said this is, there's too much in the way of letting us just organize some simple information. So it kind of came out of that idea that while we like our other product, there are other things that you need to do that really shouldn't be done in another product. So,
like reminding yourself about picking up the laundry.
Totally, or like a trip that you might be taking. You know, you can use Basecamp for that, but it's a little bit too much for that. So it just came out of that sort of need.
Okay, and then so it was kind of, you know, oh, we should do something that's kind of like a personal Basecamp with a couple more features, and you guys started talking about that probably through AIM.
Actually, it's funny. We actually were in Seattle in January of this year doing a conference out there, and we came up with the idea while we were there. We were all together. Usually we're all apart, and we were all together there.
When you say all, how many are there of you?
There's five of us.
Five of you, okay.
And there, actually three of us were together in Seattle at the time, and we all got to sit around a table and, you know, have dinner and chat. And we'd all kind of been thinking about this, but we hadn't really all put it out there together, and being in the same room together really helped to kind of get this idea together. But our ideas are very organic, so they're always changing. The idea that we had in January is nothing like the idea that we actually launched with, but it was kind of the place to germinate the idea.
All right, we got a call from Monterey, and Tom, what's your question?
Yes. Hi, Wayne.
This is Lyle, yes.
Oh, Lyle, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Tom.
My challenge is that my keyboard numeric pad stopped working a while back. I'm using Mac OS 10.
Okay.
I assumed that the keyboard, which was I purchased at the same time I purchased my eMac G4, mm-hmm. had just died. So I replaced the keyboard, and that didn't address the issue. And when I contacted Adesso, whose keyboard I used to replace it with, they said, oh, that issue is application-specific.
Okay,
but
so basically your number pad stopped working, and you're on OS X?
Yes, and okay. And it was about the time, and I can't say precisely the same time as I upgraded to 3.39.
Okay, are you in front of your computer right now?
No.
Okay, do you know about the NumLock key?
Yeah.
And you've tried the NumLock key?
Yeah, nothing happens.
I was hoping to get a strike on that ball. I was just
that was the first place I went.
Push.
Well, you know, sometimes people forget to plug in the computer. Yeah, I mean, it's just a thing that happens. But
the cup holder breaks.
Does it ever work?
It used to work fine,
but it never worked with anything.
I'm sorry?
Yeah, the keypad does not work with any applications.
No, what it does do is if I attempt to use it with some applications, occasionally what it causes is the numeric entrance area that I'm attempting to use on the screen freezes and won't accept numbers from the number section above the letters on the keyboard.
And you've replaced the keyboard?
Yes.
Well, that, I've never heard of that before.
I think my response is, yeah. Okay, do you know the keyboard and mouse section of the system preferences?
Yes.
Okay, because, of course, you've had a problem with it. You looked it up and started working on it. I'm trying to think. No, wait, not it's not there. It's under languages. Let me see.
Could it be a driver maybe that got messed up?
Yeah. Oh, international. Go under international, under personal and the system preferences. Go to international. And make sure you're using a keyboard that you use. I mean, make sure you're using the language that you think. You know, make sure you're using English.
Okay.
And play around in there and see changing those settings will do anything to you.
Under, from British English to American English, that sort of thing.
More under input menu is one of the tabs on that. There's a whole bunch of lists of what kind of keyboards you want to use. So go play in there. One of them is Keyboard Viewer. It's going to bring up a little palette, and it's going to show you what keys can strike. And if you hold down the control key, it's kind of a cool thing if you're on OS X. You can, those special characters, like Sean recently couldn't find his question mark. In the Mac environment, you can go to System Preferences and click on International, and then click on Input Menu. So System Preferences, International, Input Menu, and there's a little thing called Keyboard Viewer. And there's a few other things, too, character palette and stuff. And it will show you, help you use your keyboard a little bit better. Sean has his question mark back, which is good, but I don't think Tom has his question answered.
So that's because my pinky's not used to reaching it on this new notebook.
Okay.
It's weird.
It's
because that's my problem, not the notebook.
Tom, I wish I could be more help.
Well, I'll start there and see if that all addresses the problem.
All right.
I think Adesso tells me, and Orchek, who was the original keyboard, said, oh, well, this issue is software specific. If the program is not designed.
You know what? Send an email to the geeks. Go to geekspeak.org.
Yeah.
And send us an email using our little interface. And I bet John Tracy, our geek expert.
Our Mac expert.
Our Mac expert, excuse me. Yes, our Mac geek expert. I bet you he could figure this out.
Okay.
He's seen a lot of crazy stuff.
Yeah,
all
please.
Right.
Please
thank
do.
You
and,
very
and,
much.
And don't use numbers in the email.
Right.
Thanks, Tom.
All right. Bye-bye.
That is frustrating. You know, on my keyboard, the numlock is really far away from the area. And, of course, on a laptop keyboard, the numlock area and normal keys are in the same place.
Yeah.
So you start typing, all of a sudden everything's messed up. It
it's
takes you a second.
You wonder what's going on.
Especially if
you
it's
look
late
at that function key, you know?
Yeah. Jason Fried, you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that. The other thing about your applications, not just the way that, the features they have, but the way you interact with the system really appealed to me. When I first saw Gmail go online, you know, Google's email service,
yep.
I went, okay, that's a wonderful application. There's some things they're doing here that are great. They're not reloading the page a lot. They're allowing, you know, the user to stay there. It's just a really cool package. And you guys seem to have similar kind of design feelings. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. I mean, there's this new kind of buzzword going around, Ajax, which you guys I'm sure have heard of. Ajax, I'm not going to go into the technical side of it because I don't even understand it too much, but what I can say is that it allows web developers to create products using these technologies that don't require the page to reload all the time. So, for example, in Backpack, when you add a to-do item, the page doesn't have to reload. It's just added instantly to the page. If you add a note, the page doesn't reload. It's just added instantly to the page.
Now,
which
somebody
makes
else
faster
using
faster and more web or more application-like.
Now, does other users who are accessing the same page see the change instantly?
They won't. They'll have to reload the page.
Yeah.
Or if they add a new item to the page,
of the same type.
Update them.
Yeah.
But while you're doing your work, you don't have to constantly update.
Right. And, you know, it doesn't sound like a big deal to reload a page every once in a while, but if you work with these products and you're working with them and, you know, you do a lot with them, you might add 100 to-do items in a day, that's a pretty significant chunk of time you're just waiting there for something to reload. So
it's also the workflow. You know, like, you can think of a to-do list in about 10 seconds, right? But it takes a second and a half or 2 seconds to enter each one. It's going to slow down your thought process.
Definitely. And then you just won't use the application anymore.
That's right. And that's why web applications don't get used. I mean, I got to tell you, we have, you know, I'm sure most everybody has an ability to check their email through a web interface, as well as the normal email client they have on their machine, like Outlook or Eudora or in the Mac environment, Mail. But you have that web application interface, and it's accessible, and it functions, and all that. But you sure it's much more enjoyable to use the non-web interface. And that's because of things like this, where the page, every time you click a message, a new page loads. It's a really slow process. And I guess that's what Gmail did that was so great, where the content's kind of there easy quickly for you, and you guys are doing the same thing.
Yeah, and you're going to see a lot more people start doing this.
Oh,
and
definitely.
What's interesting is all these little technologies that do this have been around for quite a long time. It's just that the browsers are starting to be are more mature these days.
Yeah.
More people are using more modern browsers, so you can do these sorts of things.
Yeah, I guess that's a big
definitely improves the experience overall, for sure.
We are taking calls with questions and comments on GeekSpeak today. You're welcome to join us right now. The phone lines are empty. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Of course, you can send us email, which Sean is diligently checking, I hope, with questions and comments about our show. You can do that by going to geekspeak.org and clicking Contact Us. We're talking with Jason Fried. We're speaking with Jason Fried, actually, from 37 Signals. Jason, what's Backpack actually had a big, like, people were talking about it for a long time.
Yep.
And no one knew really what it did, and you guys were pretty... You might have described it to some degree, but weren't trying to describe it completely. And it built up quite a bit of hype, I would say. And I think it worked for you. When you launched on Tuesday, you had server problems because of the amount of people that were using it.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a bit about the complications of that kind of thing?
Sure. Well, we had over 10,000 people sign up in a day and a half for the product. So, you know.
Youch.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good thing, but it's tough. And there's a few different ways to handle it. Certainly, you can spend a whole lot of money up front and buy a bunch of servers and, like, be prepared for that. But we prefer, actually, we think it's better, especially for a small business, to just deal with that load over the first couple days and just deal with it. And then, you know, you don't need all that hardware moving forward. In a week from now, we won't need that much hardware.
Yeah.
So instead of spending all that money up front, you're better off just dealing with it. There are ways to deal with it along the way. We can shift things here and there and make some adjustments. And while we're still going to have that many users in a week and hopefully twice as many, they won't all be hitting it at the same exact time like
right.
for this first time.
And that's what the problem was.
That's the problem.
Everyone,
it's not the software. It's just the sheer
right.
numbers of people.
10,000 people using the product, signing up and trying everything all in one day.
And not only that, like within, you know, 6 hours when it was first announced, we had, you know, 4,000 people signed up almost. It's you know, just a tremendous amount of load. And certainly there are ways to deal with that in a hardware sense and whatnot, but, you know, it doesn't make sense to spend a ton of money up front for something you don't know if it's going to do well or whatever, and if you don't need that hardware moving forward.
Right.
It's just a business decision, basically, you have to make at a certain point.
And it does make sense. I mean, even if you needed that hardware, if you wanted that hardware or something, there is some risk in launching a product. You weren't sure that you were going to get 10,000 people signed up. What if you didn't?
Yeah, you just don't know.
And right.
Certainly, we were prepared for a big launch, but you just don't quite know. I mean, certain sites can drive so much traffic your way that you just can't do anything about it. People get flashed at it all the time,
right.
You know, and then you're just kind of screwed until the traffic goes away.
The same thing happens to us. I mean, you know, I'm assuming that this show will probably be listened to by a lot of people downloading. We have, you know, the full hour stream, and it's iPodcast, and I'm concerned, of course, because of your large audience base, if you will, of them hearing about it coming in and downloading this feed. So. It's a concern.
Hopefully we can send some people your way. Hope we don't take you down. But, you know, it's a concern for everybody, but you just do what you can do. And as long as, you know, as long as you're honest with people, you tell them what's going on, then they're okay with it. If they're kept in the dark and they don't know what's going on, then you have a problem. So when we had some server problems, we put a note on everybody's page at the top of the page saying, hey, we're experiencing heavy demand. We're sorry about it. We're working through it. You know, thanks for hanging in there with us. And people really do appreciate that.
What are you working on? Oh, Sean, go ahead. You had a question?
It's just a great idea because project management, you know, people use different types of computers, Linux, Macintosh, PC.
Yep.
Even on the PC side, people use Outlook or they use Mozilla for scheduling meetings, you know, doing the basic functions that this thing offers. And it's just great because everyone has a web browser.
And
yeah,
it's wonderful.
The web's the great equalizer, really.
Yeah. It's a wonderful situation also where half the people participating are not part of your company. So you don't control anything of the hardware and stuff. You know, you have a client. It's great for, like, web development firms. You know, it really works where you invite somebody in to participate. I want to talk to you about this 10,000 users that signed up and everything. Of course, you got the free service and stuff. You also have some paid different models and stuff. Did you get any paid people?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to share the paid numbers, but we did get a nice chunk, and we're pretty happy with the conversion rate. The thing is, you can't really, the first couple of days really are just not good days to base anything off,
because right.
crazy demand. So I think, you know, 30, 60, 90 days from now, we'll be able to really get a better idea of how it's doing and how well it's doing. But we're very happy with the numbers we've seen so far.
How are you structured legally as a company?
We're an LLC.
Uh-huh. And all five of you are equal participants?
No.
No.
No, okay. We have two members, which are owners, and then three employees.
Cool. Okay. What's up your alley for new stuff? What are you working on next?
Well, we've been working on this one product that we've been pushing off called Writeboard, and that will be probably our next product. And that's kind of a collaborative writing environment. So let's say you need to write some text and you want to have someone else look at it and make some edits and pass it back and forth. Certainly you can use Word and use a revision history and whatnot, but again, there's no really great web-based solution. There's certainly these things called wikis, which are sort of usable in that way, but they're awfully technical and confusing, I think. So we're trying to build something that's very simple for a small group of people to get together and write something together. Or just have your own document that you're working on yourself and keep all the old versions that you've written and then compare different versions to one another. So,
One of the things that I'm constantly in want of, you send emails at people with some text and you ask for feedback. You know, you're setting up a proposal or something.
Yep.
And you don't really want to be able to get that back from the person and see only the things that they're talking about.
Yep.
And try to find that easily. And most of the time what people do will, they'll go into the paragraph and they'll add some colored text in the area that they're talking about. But it's kind of frustrating because you're not able to then copy and paste that stuff because it's colored. And there's a whole bunch of issues there in that. Also, when I'm reading articles or posts and stuff, let's say someone has a blog entry that's really long and it's, 15 or 16 paragraphs, I want to make a comment about one of those paragraphs. I can, of course, copy that paragraph and put it in, but it'd be kind of nice if people were viewing, they could see comments related to sections.
Yeah, that's pretty much what this product's going to do. And it'll be web-based. You can get to it from anywhere again. And it's a pretty cool product. We actually had been working on it before we worked on Backpack.
Mm-hmm.
We also have a product called Tada List, TadaList.com, which is just a very simple to-do list maker. We started doing Writeboard before we did Tada List, but we've been pushing it off just because we felt like we had a stronger need for these other products first, but we'll get to Writeboard. We're also going to be working on our next book shortly, which will be a pretty fun experience. It's going to be all about how we build these products, how we come up with the ideas, how we design them, how we engineer them, how our team works, things like that. So we're hoping to get that done this year as well.
Wow, Tadalus is absolutely free.
Yeah, Tadalus is completely free. Tadalus is basically just the to-do list functionality from Backpack. So if you just need to make to-do lists and that's it, Tada List is a great product.
And you can share that with other people.
You can share your lists, yeah. That's the other thing with Backpack is you can share your pages that you make with other people. So if you're going on a trip with three people, share that page with three other people. Everyone can contribute and participate in the page.
Please join our conversations. The numbers are 476. I keep on saying conversations as if there were multiples. I love that. Please join our conversation. The numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. You can use the internet at geekspeak.org and click on us. Click on contact us. Question about design. That's probably the major feature of you guys' work is the design and the interface from an application perspective, like the Ajax thing where the pages don't reload, but also from just aesthetic. You got it made. What's going on there?
Well, we started out as a web design firm. We've just recently converted more into a products firm. So we're web design people or interface design people. So we've been doing that for a long time. So we care a lot about that. But the way we develop our products is that we develop the interface first. A lot of companies will do the back end first, all the programming first, and then kind of slap an interface on at the end.
Mm-hmm.
We do it just the other way. We build the interface first and essentially slap the code onto the interface. So that allows us to really pay attention to the interface, be in front of the interface for as long as we possibly can, and really, really optimize it and tweak it and adjust it the whole way through, not the last 2 weeks, but the whole, 12-week process.
How do you design the interface without the system in the back end working? I mean, I don't...
You basically design all the screens,
uh-huh.
and you link them up as if they were working.
Uh-huh.
So you just kind of fake the screens, sort of. But as you're building the screens, and you have, let's say the to-do list functionality for Backpack done, you then hand that off to David, who's our developer, who would then hook that stuff up so you can start using it for real. But in the meantime, you just kind of fake it so it looks like it's working so you get an idea of what it's going to feel like when it is working.
Let's do the URLs for this. First off, you can get to all this stuff by going to geekspeak.org and clicking on today's show. Backpack product, which is kind of the self-management thing where you can share content, images, files, notes and such, to-do lists, that's at BackpackIt, BackpackIt.com, BackpackIt.com. You can make a free account. The other products you can probably get to pretty easily by going to Backpacket and click around on there.
Or if you go to 37signals.com, all three products are listed at the top of the page.
And what does 37 Signals mean?
37 Signals is our corporate site.
What does it mean?
Oh, what does it mean? It's kind of a long story. I don't know how much time we have. It's not that long. I can make it really short. Basically, there's this thing called the SETI project.
Sure. Oh, yeah, of course.
Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. If anyone's seen Contact, that's kind of what that's about. Anyhow, back in 1999, we were watching NOVA, the show NOVA, and they had a show about the SETI project. And at the time, they'd been analyzing billions and billions of signals from space, radio waves and whatever's out there, trying to figure out if there's anything intelligent out there. And at the time, in 1999, when we started our company, 37 signals were unexplained and signs of potential intelligent life. So we thought that was a cool name, kind of tried to transition that into the web, saying we want to make a few good sites out of the billions out there that aren't that good. And,
oh, nice.
And we kind of just adopted that name, and the domain name was available, so we took it.
That's a big one in getting company names at this point, huh, making sure that your domain name is available.
Sort of, yeah. What we've done is, our product's called Backpack and Basecamp and stuff, and we couldn't get those domains, so we just appended something simple like HQ as in headquarters or it, because around the office we're saying, hey, I'll just backpack it. So we're like, oh, that's a good domain name. So I wouldn't worry too much about the domain name. As long as you kind of get the root of it nailed, you can just append things here and there at the end.
And the other thing is, longer and longer, of course.
As long as people know Google these days, like, Google's the only domain name you really care about.
Yeah.
Right. If you go to Google, do a search, you'll find whatever you need to find.
That's definitely true. So anything you want to talk about in kind of strategy as running a company that's successful and fun at the same time?
Yeah, keep it small. Keep your costs down. Keep it small. Find people who can do a lot of different things. I don't think you really ever want, at least in a small company, you don't really want specialists. You want people who are good at a few different things. I also think it's really important to find people who are good writers. Everybody should be a good writer. The designers, the programmers, the head of the company, whoever. You need to be able to write. That's how most people communicate these days, via IM or via email or even just through marketing copy on your website. People need to be able to write, so that's really important.
Who writes most of the marketing and the to-dos and things of that nature on your site?
We kind of all do. I'll generally start it out, and then Matt, who's based in New York, is a really good copywriter, so we'll hand it off to Matt. He'll make some edits. We'll pass around the office. Everyone will kind of make some edits, and then we'll just go through a few revisions. And we're always tweaking. We're constantly tweaking, so nothing's ever done. I think that's another really important point, is that nothing is ever done on the web. You should always be looking at it, should always be adjusting, and should always be tweaking it.
Well, of course, since you're a to-do list, based.
Right.
Part of your, all of your applications, they all have a to-do list.
They all have to-do lists.
So
that's what people need.
You guys must be doing that all the time then.
Yeah.
Now, how often do you check your, I'm sure you're using Basecamp for your, getting all of this stuff together.
Yep.
Making sure everyone's on track. How often do you think people actually check Basecamp? Is this a once a morning type thing, or is this a tool that you use throughout the day?
Yeah, people are using it all the time. And there's obviously like a huge load around 9 a.m., that's when people, get to the office and check it. But people are posting messages all day long. I mean, the load's pretty heavy all day. And then it's really big in Europe as well. So when the U.S. goes to sleep, Europe starts to come online. So in the middle of the night, it gets a lot of traffic as well. But it's, a lot of people are just, it is their office in a lot of ways, because a lot of virtual companies use it, freelancers or groups of three or four people spread out all over the place, and it is their office. So it does get a lot of use. Some people, check it once a week. It has RSS features, so when you post a project update, it's sent via RSS, so you don't necessarily need to log in all the time. And there's also email notifications, so when something might happen, an email might be sent to you, so you don't need to kind of constantly reload it, but it is an option if you want to.
So Jason, tell us a couple of features that you think people aren't taking advantage of enough.
In general, or...
For Basecamp or Backpack.
Yeah.
Or the web.
Backpack's early, so it's hard for me to say. One of the really cool things, and you touched on it earlier, is the fact that you can email content to a page. And it's starting to really get a lot of traction. But I think there's still a considerable amount of people who don't know this. So we just recently posted a little notice on the top of everybody's homepage saying, hey, here's a QuickTime video. You can watch this of what it's like to email content to a page. And we've seen that feature kind of become used more because of that
that QuickTime video.
We are talking about BackpackIt.com. Backpack's the product name. It's a personal web experience. I'd highly recommend it. We're speaking with the president of the company that makes it, 37 Signals. His name is Jason Fried. The phone number, the phone lines are open. You're welcome to call in with any questions. We'll probably be able to take two or three people. 1-800-655-5877 or an 831 area code 476-2800. Of course, you can send us email. Sean, can you check our email? Make sure we're not missing anybody. The URL for Backpack, backpackit.com. And I think the Basecamp product is really quite a great product, especially if you have people that need to share content that aren't in the same place. It sure beats printing paper, that's for sure.
Right.
I wanted to touch on the structure of your company from a perspective of, are you all friends?
Yeah, that's actually a good question. We are all friends, and we have a lot of trust for one another and a lot of respect for one another. And in the bottom, at the end of the day, the most important thing, and this is like advice I'd give any small business owner or anyone really, is you have to enjoy, first of all, the products you're building, but most of all, you have to enjoy the people that you work with, and you have to trust them. If you don't trust them, you can just forget it. You know, you have to think about, like, these are people you're going to spend more time with than probably anyone else in your life while you're working. So you have to, you know, you have to look at them as you might look at a relationship or anything like that. You have to find people that you get along with and that you just jive with. So, you know, the other thing is we don't get to see each other a whole lot. I see Ryan every day because Ryan's here in Chicago with me, but the other guys, you know, are spread all over. So, you know, it's good to certainly be together, but there's also a lot of benefits in being apart, as long as you can trust each other to get things done when they need to get done.
From Santa Cruz, we have Nancy. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, I'm on a cell, so I hope you can hear me.
Okay, I hope you're not driving. Go ahead.
No, of course not. I love your show, by the way. You guys are great.
Thanks.
And my question is, what's the response going on the new Apple release of Tiger, and when do you think, story on when the next upgrade of that release would be?
Of Tiger?
Of Tiger, yeah. Any rumors on that front?
Meaning, should I buy it now or wait?
Exactly.
Okay, well, Apple's pretty good about making their products, the upgrades to their operating system, free for about a year or more. So I would go ahead and buy Tiger now if you're going to buy it and upgrade, because you're set up for at least a year not buying another operating system from Apple. And the feature set that's in there is pretty amazing. I guess we should do a show on Tiger and talk about a bit about all the new features and such. We'll probably do that as soon as I get it on my computer so we can play with it. But I would say that it's probably as good a time as any to buy Tiger, if you're going to buy it.
So you don't give much credence to the notion that you should never buy the first release of any product or any upgrade?
You know, I do normally do that. I think that on a major operating system release, well, I don't know. Sean, what do you think about buying an operating system right when it's out?
Well, I mean, I want to test it out and play with it, so
right.
I'm a little different. But if it were mission critical and everything was working just fine the way it was, I would wait.
How long?
You get a good idea if you read the news, just how something's coming along, if there are problems.
2 weeks?
And basically, no, I don't know, maybe 2 weeks to a month.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I'd say at that point you're going to have heard whether there's problems or not.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, this is a major upgrade for me from 922.
Oh, what's your hardware?
The G4 PowerBook.
Okay, you can do it.
Yeah, it's a great PowerBook. It's old, but I love it.
Yeah.
But I've got to get up to 10, and I just haven't been able to get up to any other release until now. I
would wait a while because that's some old hardware, and I'd do some research on it. I'm going to have to say goodbye to you. Thank you for the call. We're not going to be able to say hello to Bruce. Thank you for the call as well. Jason Fried has been our guest today on GeekSpeak. Jason is the president of 37 Signals. You can learn about their products by going to 37signals.com or by going to our site. This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering extensive selection of computer and electronic parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 SoCal Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. Jason, thank you very much for joining us today on GeekSpeak.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate
that. Yeah, very great technology.
Really, really wonderful. I highly recommend using the product.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Okay.
And remember, backpackit.com or basecamphq.com to learn more information about their products.
That's Sean Cleveland. I'm Lyle Troxell. Our producer is Maggie Cleveland, who also answered the phones today. Thank you very much. for your participation in GeekSpeak.
Thank you, Lyle.
For those of you listening and calling in, thank you very much for making GeekSpeak what it is. Without you, at SBS geeking out. And, you know, who wants to really listen to that? next week's show, we've got something really cool. Project Utopia is a massively multiplayer online environment, meaning a game that lots of hundreds of thousands of people play, and their economy in the game is based on the U.S. economy. So you have your character harvest wheat, you sell it, and you can get cash out of it.
Excellent.
The game is free. We'll learn all about it next week.
And the week after that, Dee Dee's going to be in the house.
That's right.
After she attends E3.
Coming up next is Open Road with Matt Pierce, the Two Steps of the Blues, the Charlie Lang. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. Santa Cruz, KVH, San Outer, on the web at kusp.org.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. President Bush is traveling to the Baltic state of Latvia as part of a European tour marking the 60th anniversary of the end of World War II. He will meet with the presidents of all three Baltic states before flying to Russia and later Georgia. Stephen Pollock has reported.